I cast the grain of prophecy at your feet and you cluck and scratch at the dirt and then peck at gravel. For the first time since she became a sister, she felt small and ignorant. Nathan, that will be quite enough.
Idiots!
He hissed. He lurched toward her so quickly it frightened her. Before she knew it, she had released a bolt of power. It dropped him to his knees. He clutched at his chest as he gasped. Margaret recalled her power almost instantly, sorry she had reacted in this manner, out of fear. I apologize, Nathan. You frightened me. Are you all right? He grasped the chair back, drawing himself up into it as he gasped. He nodded. She sat still, ill at ease, waiting for him to recover. A grim smile spread on his lips.
Frightened you, did I? Would you like to be really frightened? Would you like me to show you a prophecy? Not tell you in words, but show it to you? Show it to you the way it was meant to be passed on? I have never shown a sister before. You all study them and think you can decipher their meanings from the words, but you don't understand. It is not the true way they work.
She leaned forward. What do you mean that is not the way they work? They are meant to foretell, and that is what they do. He shook his head.
Only partly. They are passed on by ones with the gift, ones like me, prophets. They are intended to be read and understood through the gift, by ones with the gift, ones like me, not to be picked over by the likes of your power.
As he straightened himself, pulling the aura of authority around himself again, she studied his face. She had never heard of such a thing. She wasn't sure if he was telling the truth or just talking out of anger. But if it was the truth, Nathan, anything you could tell me or show me would be a great help. We are all struggling on the side of the Creator. His cause must prevail. The forces of the Nameless One struggle always to silence us. Yes, I would like you to show me a prophecy the way it is meant to be passed on, if you can. He drew himself up, peering at her with burning intensity. At last, he spoke softly.
Very well, Sister Margaret.
He leaned toward her, his expression so grave it nearly took her breath away.
Look into my eyes, he whispered. Lose yourself in my eyes.
His gaze drew her in, the deep azure color spreading in her vision, until it seemed she was looking up into the clear sky. She felt as if he were drawing every breath for her.
I will tell you the prophecy of the true fork again, but this time I will show it to you as it is meant to be.
She floated as she listened.
Of all there were, but a single one born of the magic to bring forth truth will remain alive.
The words melted away, and instead she saw the prophecy, as if seeing a vision. She was pulled into it. She was no longer in the palace, but in the vision itself. She saw a beautiful woman with long hair dressed in a satiny white dress, the Mother Confessor. Margaret saw the other confessors being killed by quads sent from Dahara, and she felt the blinding horror of it. She saw the woman's best friend and sister confessor die in her arms. She felt the grief of the Mother Confessor. Then Margaret saw the Mother Confessor before the one from Dahara, who had sent the quads to kill the other confessors. The handsome man in white stood before three boxes. To Margaret's surprise, each box cast a different number of shadows. The man in white robes performed rituals, cast evil spells, underworld spells, late into the night, through the night, until the sun rose. As the day brightened, somehow Margaret knew that it was this day. She was seeing what had happened this very day. The man in white had finished with the preparations. He stood before the boxes, smiling. He reached out and opened the one in the center, the one that cast two shadows. Light from within the box bathed him in its brilliance at first, but then, in a flash of power, the magic of the box swirled about him and snuffed out his life. He had chosen wrong. He had forfeited his life to the magic he sought to claim. She saw the Mother Confessor with a man she loved. She felt her happiness. It was a joy the woman had never experienced before. Margaret's heart swelled with the bliss the mother confessor felt at the sight of this man. It was a vision of what was happening at this very moment. And then Margaret's mind swept forward in a swirl. She saw war and death sweep across the land. She saw death brought by the keeper of the underworld to the world of the living with a wicked lust that choked her with terror. Again the prophecy swept her forward to a great crowd. At the center was the mother confessor standing on a heavy platform. The people were excited and in a celebratory mood. This was the joyous event that would bring the fork of the prophecy. One of the forks that must be passed correctly to save the world from the darkness snatching at it. She was caught up in the festive mood of the crowd. She felt a tingle of expectant hope, wondering if the man the mother confessor loved was to be the one she was to wed, and if that was the happy event the prophecy spoke of that would bring joy to the people. Her heart ached for it to be so. But something wasn't right. Margaret's warm delight cooled until her flesh prickled with icy bumps. With a wave of worry, Margaret saw that the mother confessor's hands were bound, and next to her stood a man, not the man she loved, but a man in a black hood. He held a great axe. Margaret's worry turned to horror. A hand forced the mother confessor to kneel, seized her hair, and laid her face to the block. Her hair was short now, not long as it had been before, but it was the same woman. Tears seeped from the mother confessor's closed eyes. Her white dress shimmered in the bright sunlight. Margaret couldn't breathe. The great crescent axe rose into the air. It flashed through the sunlight, thunking solidly into the block. Margaret gasped. The mother confessor's head dropped into the basket. The crowd cheered. Blood gushed and spread down the dress as the headless, lifeless corpse collapsed to the wooden floor. A pool of bright blood spread under the body, turning the white dress red. So much blood! The crowd roared with elation. A wail of horror escaped Margaret's throat. She thought she might vomit. Nathan caught her as she fell forward, crying and sobbing. He held her to him as a father would a frightened child.
"Ah, Nathan, is that the event that will bring joy to the people? Is this what must happen if the world of the living is to be saved?"
"It is," he said softly. "Almost every prophecy down this true branch is a fork. If the world of the living is to be saved from the keeper of the underworld, then every event must take the correct branch. In this prophecy, the people must rejoice at seeing the mother confessor die, for down the other fork lies the eternal darkness of the underworld. I don't know why it is so." Margaret sobbed into his robes as his strong arms held her tight against him.
"Oh, dear Creator," she cried, "take mercy on your poor child. Give her strength."
"There is no mercy when fighting the keeper."
"Ah, Nathan, I have read prophecies of people dying, but it was only words. To see it as real has wounded my soul."
He patted her back as he held her. "I know. How well I know." Margaret pushed herself up, wiping tears from her face.
"This is the true prophecy that lies beyond the one that forked today?"
"It is."
"And this is the way they are meant to be seen?"
"It is so. This is the way they come to me. I have shown you the way I see them. The words, too, come with the prophecy, and those are what are to be written down, so those not meant to see the prophecies will not see them as they truly are, but those who are meant to will see them when they read the words. I have never before shown anyone a prophecy."
"Then why have you shown me?"
His sad eyes regarded her for a moment. "Margaret, we are in a battle with the keeper. You are meant to know the danger we are in."
"We are always in a battle with the keeper."
"I think perhaps this is different."
"I must tell the others. I must tell them what you can show them. We must have your help to understand the prophecies."
"No, I will show no other what I have shown you. No matter the pain they would think to inflict upon me, I will not cooperate. I will never again do this for you or another sister."
"But why not?"
"You are not meant to see them, only to read them."
"But that can't be."
"It is meant to be.
Otherwise, your gift would work to unlock them. You are not meant to see them, just as you often tell me others with common minds are not meant to hear them.
But they could help us.
They would help you no more than the one I told that girl helped her, or the thousands who died. Just as you keep me a prisoner here so others may not hear what they are not meant to hear, so I must keep all but another prophet a prisoner of their ignorance. It is the will of he who has given the gift and all else. Had he meant you to, he would have given you the key with your gift, but he has not.
Nathan, there are others who would hurt you until you revealed it to them.
I will not reveal it to them, no matter how much they hurt me. They will kill me before I do so.
He tilted his head toward her,
and they won't try unless you tell them.
She stared at him, seeing him differently than she had ever seen him before. None before had ever been as devious as he. He was the only one they had never been able to trust. All the others had told the truth about their gift and its capabilities, but they knew Nathan lied, knew he was not telling them all he was able to do. She wondered what he knew, what he was capable of.
I will go to my grave with what you have shown me, Nathan.
He closed his eyes and nodded. Thank you, child. There were other sisters who would have hurt him for addressing a sister so. She was not one of them. She stood and straightened her dress.
In the morning I will tell those in the vaults of the prophecy that has forked, and of the ones on the false and on the true branches. They will have to decipher them as best they can with what their Creator has given them.
That is the way it is meant to be.
She returned the ink, pen, and sand shaker to the desk drawer. Nathan, why did you want the prelate to come? I don't recall you ever asking for her before. When she looked up, he was studying her with cool detachment.
That too, Sister Margaret, is not for you to know. Do you wish to bring me pain, to attempt to make me tell you?
She picked up the book of prophecy off the desk.
No, Nathan, I will not do that.
Then you will deliver a message to the prelate for me?
She nodded, sniffling back the tears that still burned at her eyes. What would you have me tell her?
Will you take this too to your grave and tell no other but the prelate?
If you wish it, although I don't see why. You can trust the sisters.
No. Margaret, I want you to listen to me. When it is the Keeper you battle, you must not trust anyone. I am taking a dangerous chance in trusting you and the prelate. Trust no one.
His bunched eyebrows gave him a frightening look.
Only those you trust can betray you.
All right, Nathan, what is the message? He peered intently at her. At last his words came in a whisper.
Tell her that the pebble is in the pond.
Margaret blinked at him. What does that mean?
You have been frightened enough, child. Don't tempt your endurance again.
Sister Margaret, Nathan, she said softly. I am not child, but Sister Margaret. Please treat me with the respect I am accorded.
He smiled. Forgive me, Sister Margaret.
Sometimes his eyes ran shivers up her spine.
One more thing, Sister Margaret.
What is it?
He reached out and brushed a tear from her cheek. I don't really know of your death.
She sighed inwardly with relief. But I do know something else of importance pertaining to you, of importance in the battle with the Keeper. If it will help me to bring the Creator's light upon the world, then tell me. He seemed to draw himself inward, looking out at her as if from a great distance.
A time will come, soon, when you stumble upon something, and you will have need to know the answer to a question. I don't know the question, but when you have the need to find the answer, come to me, and that I will know. This, too, you must tell no other.
Thank you, Nathan.
She reached out and touched his hand.
The Creator's blessing on his child.
No, thank you, sister. I do not wish anything more from the Creator.
She stared at him in surprise.
Because we keep you locked in here?
His small smile returned. There are many different kinds of prisons, sister. As far as I am concerned, his blessings are tainted. The only thing worse than being touched by the Creator is being touched by the Keeper. And of that, I am not even resolved. She took her hand back.
I will still pray for you, Nathan.
If you care so much for me, then free me.
I'm sorry I can't do that.
You mean you won't do that?
Look at it how you will, but you must remain here.
At last he turned away from her. She started for the door. Sister, would you send a woman to visit me, to spend a night or two with me? The pain in his voice almost made her weep.
I thought you would be beyond that age.
He slowly turned to her. You have a lover, Sister Margaret. She reeled at this.
How could he know?
He didn't know. He was guessing. She was young and thought attractive by some. Of course she would be interested in men. He was only guessing. But then none of the sisters knew what he was able to do. He was the only wizard they couldn't trust to be truthful about his powers. You listen to gossip, Nathan? He smiled. Tell me, Sister Margaret, do you have the day planned out in advance when you will be too old for love, even if it is only for a time as fleeting as a night? Exactly how old, sister, is it when we lose the need for love? She stood silent, ashamed for a time.
I will go myself, Nathan, into the city and bring back a woman to visit you for a time. Even if I must pay her price myself, I can't pledge she will be beautiful to your eyes, as I don't know what your eyes fancy. But I can vow she will not be empty between the ears, as I think you value this more than you will admit.
She saw a single tear fall from the corner of his eye.
Thank you, Sister Margaret. But Nathan, you must promise me you will tell her no prophecy.
He bowed his head slightly.
Of course, sister.
I swear it on my word as a wizard.
I mean it, Nathan. I do not wish to have a part in being responsible for people dying. Not only men died in those battles, but women too. I could not bear having a part in it.
His eyebrows lifted. Not even, Sister Margaret, if one of those women would bear, had she lived, a boy child who would grow into a brutal tyrant, who would go on to torture and slaughter tens of thousands upon tens of thousands of innocent people, women and children among them, not even, sister, if you had a chance to choke off this fork of a terrible prophecy. She stood stunned, frozen. At last she made herself blink.
Nathan,
she whispered.
Are you saying?
Good night, Sister Margaret. He turned and strode off to the solitude of his small garden, pulling up his black hood as he went. Chapter 6. The wind ripped at her, tugging at her clothes and snapping the loose ends. After yesterday's tangled mess, Kaylin was at least glad she had thought to tie back her hair. She clung to Richard for dear life, pressing the side of her face against his back as she squeezed her eyes tightly shut. It was happening again, the thick feeling of growing heavy that made the knot in the pit of her stomach sink lower of its own accord. She thought she might be sick. She was afraid to open her eyes. She knew what always happened when she felt heavy like this. Richard called back for her to look. She opened her eyes just a little, peeking through narrow, squinting slits. As she suspected, the world was tilted at a crazy angle. Her head spun sickeningly. Why did the dragon have to tip over whenever it made a turn? She could feel herself being pressed against the red scales. She couldn't understand why she wasn't falling off. Richard had told her he had figured out that it was just like when you swung a bucket of water around over your head and the water didn't fall out. She had never swung a bucket of water over her head and wasn't entirely sure he was telling the truth about the water not falling out. She looked longingly at the ground and saw what Richard was pointing at, the Mud People's village. Sidon squealed with glee from his place in Richard's lap as Scarlet's huge leathery wings caught the air and pulled them into a tight spiral. As the red dragon plummeted earthward, the knot of Kaylin's stomach felt as if it were coming up in her throat. She didn't understand how they could like doing this. They enjoyed it. They actually enjoyed it. Arms stuck up in the air. They were both laughing with delight, acting like little boys. Well, one was a little boy, and she guessed he had a right. She suddenly smiled and then laughed herself, not at flying on a dragon, but at seeing how happy Richard was. She would fly on a dragon every day just to see him laughing and happy. She stretched up and kissed the back of his neck. He brought his hands down and rubbed one on each of her legs. She clasped them tighter around him and forgot a little about feeling sick. Richard called forward for Scarlet to land in the open field in the center of the village. The sun was almost down, making the tan, plastered, mud-bricked buildings in the circle of the village stand out brightly in the slanting light. Kaelin could smell the sweet smoke from the cooking fires. The long shadows trailed the people running for cover. Women ran from the cooking shelters and men from their weapons making, all shouting and calling out. She hoped they wouldn't be too frightened. The last time Scarlet had come here, she had carried Dark and Rawl, and when he didn't find Richard, he had killed people. These people didn't know Rawl had forced Scarlet to fly him around after he had stolen her egg. Of course, even without Dark and Rawl riding her, no one ever thought of a red dragon as anything but a deadly threat. She herself would have run for her life at seeing a red dragon. The red were the most fearsome of all the dragons, and no one would ever imagine doing anything with a red dragon except trying to kill it or running for his life. No one but Richard, that is. Who else but Richard would think to befriend one? He had risked his life to get her egg free from Rawl's control so she would help him, and in the process had made a friend for life, although Scarlet still professed her intent to eat him someday. Kaelin suspected it was some private joke between the two, as Richard laughed whenever she said it. At least Kaelin hoped it was only a joke. She wasn't entirely sure. Kaelin looked down at the village and hoped the hunters didn't start shooting poison arrows before they saw who was riding the red dragon. Sidon suddenly recognized his home. He pointed excitedly and jabbered to Richard in the mud people's language. Richard couldn't understand a word of it, but smiled and nodded and ruffled Sidon's hair. They both gripped the spikes on Scarlet's back as she pulled out of the steep descent. Dust swept up around them, lifted by the fluttering of Scarlet's huge wings as she settled on the ground. Richard grabbed hold of Sidon and sat the little boy up on his broad shoulders, then stood up on Scarlet's back. The stiff, cold breeze carried the dust away to reveal a ragged ring of hunters, their bows drawn, poison arrows pointing up at the three of them. Kaelin held her breath. Grinning, Sidon waved both hands over his head, as Richard had told him to. Scarlet held her head down so the mud people could get a clear view of who was riding her. The hunters, astonished, cautiously lowered their bows. Kaelin exhaled when she saw the tension come off the bowstrings. A figure in buckskin pants and tunic stepped through the ring of hunters. Long silver hair hung down, spreading over his shoulders. It was the Birdman, his sun-browned face a picture of shock. "It's me, Richard. I have returned. With your help, we have defeated Dark and Rawl, and we have brought Savindlin and Wesselin's son back." The Birdman looked to Kaelin as she translated. A beaming grin spread on his face. "We welcome you both back to your people with open arms." Women and children were gathering among the ring of hunters, their dark, mud-slicked hair framing amazed faces. Scarlet lowered her bulky body to the ground, and Richard slid off her shoulder, landing on his boots with a thump. He held Sidon in one arm as he reached up with the other and helped Kaelin down. She was quietly joyful to have her feet on the earth again. Wesselin pushed through the throng running to them, Savindlin right at her heels. She wailed her son's name. Sidon held his arms out gleefully and practically leapt into her arms. Wesselin alternated between crying and laughing as she tried to hug her son and Richard and Kaelin all at once. Savindlin rubbed the boy's back and looked to her and Richard with wet eyes. "He was as brave as any hunter," Kaelin told him. He gave a single firm, pride-filled nod. He appraised her for a moment and then stepped closer, giving her a gentle slap. "Strength to Confessor Kaelin." Kaelin returned the slap and greeting, and then he threw his arms around her and squeezed her tight for a long time. When finished with hugging her, he straightened his elder's coyote hide on his shoulders and looked up at Richard. He shook his head in wonderment
and then he gave Richard a powerfully hard whack across the jaw, a demonstration of his heartfelt respect for Richard's strength. Strength to Richard with the temper. Kaylin wished he hadn't done that. She could tell by Richard's eyes that he had a headache. He had had it since yesterday, and she had hoped it would be better after a good sleep the night before in Scarlet's Cave. Sidon had played with the little red dragon until he was dead tired, and then had cuddled between them and gone to sleep. Having not slept for days, she thought she would have no trouble sleeping, but she found she didn't want to stop looking at Richard. She had finally put her head on his shoulder, held his hand in both of hers, and fallen asleep smiling. They had all needed the rest. Bad dreams had caused Richard to jerk awake several times in a cold sweat, and even though he had said nothing, she could see in his eyes that he still had the headache. Richard didn't let it bother him, though, and returned Savidlin's slap in kind. Strength to Savidlin, my friend. Properly greeted, souls protected, Savidlin let his grins and back slaps fly. After they had exchanged greetings with the Birdman, Richard addressed the crowd. This brave and noble dragon, Scarlet, he called out in a voice for all to hear, even though they couldn't understand the words, has helped me kill Darkenrall and avenge our murdered people. She has brought us here so Sidon could be returned before his parents could fear for him another night. She is my friend, a friend to the Mud People. Everyone was dumbfounded as Kaylin translated. The hunters, at least, puffed up at hearing that an enemy of the Mud People had been killed by one of their own, even if he was one of their own by proclamation and not by birth. The Mud People honored strength, and to them, killing one who harmed their people meant strength. Scarlet's head swung down, her ears twitching. One yellow eye frowned at Richard. Friend. Red dragons are friends to no people. We are feared by all. You're my friend, Richard smiled. I'm a person. Scarlet snorted a puff of smoke at him. Pah! I will eat you yet. Richard's grin widened. He pointed at the Birdman. You see this man? He gave me a whistle that I used to save your egg. If not for that whistle, the Gars might have eaten your little one. He stroked a hand on the bright red snout. And a wonderful little one it is. Scarlet tilted her head, blinking a big yellow eye at the Birdman. I guess he would make a meager snack. She peered back at Richard, a chuckle rumbling in her throat. The whole of the village wouldn't make a decent meal. More trouble than it would be worth. She brought her head closer to him. If they are your friends, Richard Cipher, they are my friends, too. And Scarlet, this one is called the Birdman because he loves creatures that fly. Scarlet's scaly eyebrows lifted. Really? She swung her head close to the Birdman, inspecting him anew. The proximity of Scarlet's big head caused a few close to him to back away a step or two. The Birdman held his ground. Thank you, Birdman, for helping Richard. He has saved my young one. The Mud People have nothing to fear from me, on my dragon's honor. The Birdman looked to Kaylin as she translated, smiled to Scarlet, and then turned to his people. As Richard with the temper says, this noble dragon, Scarlet, is a friend to the Mud People. She may hunt our land, and we will bring no harm to her, nor her to us. Cheering erupted from the crowd. For a people to have a dragon as a friend was taken as an honor to their strength. Everyone seemed to be shouting with excitement. They waved their arms in the air and stamped around in little dances. Scarlet joined in the merriment by throwing her head back and sending a roaring column of flame skyward. The people cheered louder. Kaylin noticed Richard glancing off to the side. She followed the direction of his gaze to a small band of hunters standing together. None of them were cheering. She recognized their leader. He was the one who had blamed Richard for bringing trouble to their village, blamed Richard for the deaths of Mud People at the hands of Darkenrall. As the hooting and hollering went on, Richard motioned Scarlet toward him. When she lowered her head, he put his face right in her ear. She listened to whatever he was saying and then pulled her head back, regarding him with a big yellow eye. She nodded. Richard held out the carved bone whistle hanging from a leather thong at his neck as he turned to the Birdman.
You gave me this as a gift, but told me it would never aid me because I could only call all the birds at once. I think maybe the good spirits wanted it that way. This gift helped me save everyone from Darkenral. It helped me save Kaelin. Thank you. The birdman smiled at the translation. Richard whispered in Kaelin's ear that he would be back in a short time and then climbed up on Scarlet. Honored Elder, Scarlet and I would like to give you a small gift. We would like to take you up in the air so you may see where your beloved birds fly. He extended a hand to the birdman. The elder, upon hearing the translation, looked apprehensively at Scarlet. Her vibrant red scales were glossy in the late afternoon sun, undulating with her breathing. Her tail reached nearly to the mud brick homes across the field. The dragon unfolded her wings and lazily stretched them. He looked at Richard, who was still offering his hand to him. A little boy grin lit the elder's face. It made Kaelin laugh. He clasped Richard's arm and hoisted himself up. Savinlin strode over and stood by Kaelin as the dragon rose into the air. The people cheered their approval as they watched the dragon lifting their honored elder into the air. Kaelin wasn't seeing the dragon. She saw only Richard. She could hear the birdman laughing as Scarlet carried them up and away. She hoped he was still laughing after Scarlet made a turn. Savinlin glanced at her. He is a rare person, Richard with the temper. She smiled and nodded. Her gaze went across the way to the man who wasn't cheering or happy. Savinlin, who is that man?
Chandelin.
He blames Richard for Darkenral coming here and killing people. The wizard's first rule came to her mind. People will believe anything. If it wasn't for Richard, Darkenral would rule us all now. The same Darkenral who killed those people. Savinlin shrugged. Not everyone who has eyes can see. Remember the elder you killed, Tofalar? That was his uncle. She nodded absently. Wait here. Kaelin walked across the field, pulling the tie from her hair as she went. She was still dazed by the knowledge that Richard loved her and that he couldn't be harmed by her magic. It was hardly possible to believe she, a confessor, could ever experience love. It went against everything she had ever been taught. She just wanted to take Richard somewhere alone and kiss him and hug him until they were old. There was no way she was going to allow this man, Chandelin, to bring any harm to Richard. Now that she and the man she loved could somehow magically be together, she wasn't going to allow anything to jeopardize that. The mere thought of anyone harming Richard brought the blood rage, the Khandar, boiling up inside her. She had never known about the Khandar before. Had never known it was part of her magic until she brought it forth when she thought Richard had been killed. Since then, she felt it within her, just as she always felt the rest of the confessor's magic. With his arms folded across his chest, Chandelin watched her come. His hunters stood behind him, leaning on spears planted butt first in the ground. Apparently, they had just returned from a hunt. Their lean bodies were still smeared with sticky mud. They stood easy, but alert. Bows were slung over their shoulders, and quivers hung at one side of their belts, long knives at the other. There were smears of blood on some of the men. Grass tied in bands at their upper arms and around their heads helped make them invisible in the surrounding grassland when they chose to be. Kaelin stopped in front of Chandelin, looking into his dark eyes. She slapped him. Strength to Chandelin. He pulled his glare from her. Arms still folded, turned his head and spat. His fierce eyes came back to hers. What do you want, confessor? The hunters' mud-streaked faces all took on small, tight smiles. The mud people's land was probably the only place where it was an insult not to be slapped. Richard with the temper has sacrificed more than you could ever know to save our people from Darkenral. Why do you hate him?
The two of you have brought trouble to my people. You will bring it again.
Our people, she corrected. Kaelin unbuttoned the cuff of her shirt and drew the sleeve up to her shoulder. She pushed her arm up in front of his face. Tofalar cut me. This is the scar he left as he tried to kill me. That was before I killed him, not after. He killed himself by attacking me. I did not go after him. Without emotion, Chandelin's gaze rose from the scar to her eyes. Uncle never was very good with a knife. Pity. Kaylin's jaw clenched rigid. She couldn't back down now. She kissed the end of her fingers as she held his gaze. Reaching out, she touched the kissed fingers to his cheek, where she had slapped him. The hunters broke into angry whispers, yanking their spears from the ground. Chandelin's face twisted into a hateful glare. This was the worst insult you could give a hunter. He had given a disrespectful slight by not slapping her. It did not admit to having no respect for her strength, only that he didn't wish to show it if he did. By placing a kiss where she had offered a slap of respect, she had withdrawn her respect for his strength. The touch of the kiss said she had no respect for his strength and considered him no more than a foolish child. She had as much as spat on his honor publicly. While this was a dangerous thing to do, it was more dangerous among the mud people to show weakness to an enemy. That would be an invitation to be murdered in your sleep. Showing weakness denied you the right to face an adversary in the light. Honor required that strength be challenged openly. Since she had done this to him in the view of others, honor required any challenge from him be the same. "From now on," she said, "if you want my respect, you must earn it." Chandelin's white-knuckled fist jerked back to his ear, preparing to strike her. Kaylin held her chin out for him. "So, you have decided to show your respect for my strength?" His glare flicked to something behind her. His hunters flinched and reluctantly thrust the butts of their spears into the ground. Kaylin turned and saw about 50 men with drawn bows. Every arrow was leveled at Chandelin, or one of his 9 men. "So," Chandelin sneered, "you are not so strong. You must ask others to back you." "Lower your weapons," she called back to the men. "No one is to raise a weapon to these men for me. No one. This is between Chandelin and me only." Reluctantly, all the bows lowered, and the arrows rattled back into quivers. Chandelin folded his arms once more. "You are not so strong. You will hide behind the Seeker's sword, too." Kaylin slapped her hand onto his forearm and gripped it tightly. Chandelin's eyes widened a little as he froze. For a confessor to place her hand on someone in this manner was an overt threat, and he recognized it as such. Defiant or not, he knew better than to move a muscle. He couldn't move as fast as her thought, and that was all she needed. Her voice was a low hiss. "In the last year I have killed more men than you have falsely boasted to have killed in the whole of your life. If you ever try to harm Richard, I will kill you." She leaned closer. "If you even dare to express the thought out loud and it reaches my ears, I will kill you." She took in the hunters with a deliberate sweep of her gaze. "My hand will always be extended to each of you in friendship. If any hand extends to me with a knife, I will kill you as I killed Tofilar. I am the Mother Confessor. Don't think I can't or won't." She held the gaze of each hunter in turn until they nodded in acknowledgement. Her hard eyes came at last to Chandelin. Her grip tightened. He swallowed. At last he, too, nodded. "This is a matter between us. I will not speak to the Birdman of it." She took her hand from his arm. In the distance, the dragon roared its return. "We are on the same side, Chandelin. We both fight for the Mud People to live. That part of you I respect." She gave him a very small slap. She offered him no opportunity to return it or to fail to, and instead turned her back to him. The slap had given him back a small amount of his respect in the eyes of his men, and would make him look foolish and weak if he chose to press an attack now. It was a small offering, but it had shown she acted honorably. She would leave it up to his men to decide if he had. Bullying a woman brought no honor. But then, she was no mere woman. She was a confessor. Kaylin let out a deep breath as she returned to Savidlin and turned to watch the dragon land. Wesselin stood next to him, still hugging Sidon tightly. For his part, Sidon didn't look to want anything else in the world but to be rocked in his mother's arms. Kalin gave a mental shudder at the thought of what might have happened to him. Sevenlin turned to her and raised an eyebrow. You would make a good elder, Mother Confessor. You could give lessons in honor and leadership. I would prefer the lessons weren't necessary. Sevenlin grunted his agreement. Dust and wind kicked up by the dragon's wings fluttered past in fits that billowed her cloak. Kalin was buttoning her cuff when the two men slid off Scarlet. The birdman looked a little green, but he was grinning from ear to ear. He stroked a red scale respectfully and beamed at the yellow eye that watched him. Kalin approached, and the birdman asked her to translate a message to Scarlet. She smiled and looked up at the dragon's huge head, at its ears, which were now turning toward her. The birdman would like you to know that this has been one of the greatest honors of his life. He says you have given him the gift of a new vision. He says that from this day forward, if you or your young one ever need refuge, you will always be welcome and safe in this land. Scarlet gave a sort of dragon grin. Thank you, Birdman. I am pleased. She lowered her head to speak to Richard. I must leave now. My young one has been alone long enough and will be hungry. Richard smiled as he stroked a red scale. Thank you, Scarlet, for everything. Thank you for showing us your little one. It is even more beautiful than you. Take care of the both of you. Live free. Scarlet spread her jaws wide and reached into the back of her mouth. There was a snap, and she brought a tooth point out, held in her black-tipped talons. It was only a point, but a good 6 inches long. Dragons have magic, she told him. Hold out your hand. She dropped the tooth point in Richard's palm. You seem to have a knack for getting yourself in trouble. Keep this safe. If you ever have great need, call me with it. And I will come, be certain, as it will only work once. But how can I call you with it? Her head floated closer to him. You have the gift, Richard Cipher. Just hold it in your hand and call to me. I will hear. Remember, great need. Thank you, Scarlet, but I don't have the gift. Scarlet threw her head back and rumbled in laughter. The ground shook. The scales on her throat vibrated. When her fit of laughter died out in spurts, she tilted her head to look at him with one yellow eye. If you don't have the gift, then no one does. Live free, Richard Cipher. Everyone in the village watched in silence as the red dragon grew smaller in the golden sky. Richard put his arm around Kalin's waist, pulling her close against him. I hope that I finally heard the last of this nonsense about me having the gift, he muttered, half to himself. I saw you from up in the air. He pointed with his chin across the clearing. You want to tell me what that was all about with our friend over there? Chandelin was making a point of not looking at her. No, it's not important. Are we ever going to get to be alone? Kalin asked with a coy smile. Pretty soon I'm going to have to start kissing you in front of all these people. Dusk was bringing a cozy, fading light to the impromptu feast. Richard glanced around the grass-roofed shelter at the elders in their coyote hides. They were all smiles and chatter. Their wives and a few children had joined the group. People were stopping by the shelter to welcome the two of them back, smiling and exchanging gentle slaps. Little children across the way were chasing brown chickens that wanted nothing more than to find a place to roost for the night. The chickens squawked as they made flapping escapes. She couldn't understand how the children could stand to be naked, as cold as it was. Women in bright dresses were bringing woven trays of tava bread and glazed pottery bowls of roasted peppers, rice cakes, long boiled beans, cheese, and roasted meats. You really think they're going to let us get away before we tell them the whole story of our great adventure? What great adventure? All I remember is being scared to death all the time and being in more trouble than I knew how to get out of. Her insides twisted in pain at the memory of learning he had been captured by a Mord Sith. And thinking you were dead. He smiled. Didn't you know? That's what an adventure is, being in trouble. I've had enough of adventure to last me the rest of my life. Richard's gray eyes looked distant. Me too. Her gaze went to the red leather rod, the Agile, which hung on a gold chain around his neck. She reached back and took a piece of cheese from a platter. Her face brightened. She put the cheese to his mouth. Maybe we can just make up a story that sounds like a proper adventure, a short adventure.
Suits me, he said, and then bit off a chunk of the cheese as she held it to his mouth.
Immediately, he spit the cheese into his hand and made a sour face.
This is awful, he whispered.
Really? She sniffed the piece she still held. She took a tiny bite. Well, I don't like cheese, but it doesn't taste any worse than usual to me. I don't think it has gone bad. He was still making the face.
Tastes like it has to me.
Caitlin thought a minute and then frowned. Yesterday at the People's Palace, you didn't like the cheese there either, and Zed said there was nothing wrong with it.
Nothing wrong with it? It tasted rotten. I ought to know. I love cheese. I eat it all the time. I know bad cheese when I eat it.
Well, I hate cheese. Maybe you're just picking up my habits. He rolled a roasted pepper in a piece of tava bread and grinned.
I could think of a worse fate.
As she returned the smile, she saw two hunters approaching. Her back stiffened. Richard noticed her reaction and sat up straighter. These are two of Chandelin's men. I don't know what they want. She gave him a wink. Be a good boy. Let's not have an adventure. Without smiling or answering, he turned and watched the two come. The hunters stopped in front of her at the edge of the platform. They planted the butts of their spears firmly in the ground, leaning on them with both hands. They both assessed her with slightly narrowed eyes and small, tight smiles that weren't entirely unfriendly. The one closest pushed his bow a little farther up on his shoulder and then extended an open hand to her, palm up. She looked down at the hand. She knew what it meant. An open hand offered without a weapon in it. She glanced up at him in confusion. Does Chandelin approve of this? We are Chandelin's men, not his children. He kept the hand out. Caitlin looked at it a moment and then stroked her palm over his. His smile widened a little, and he gave her a gentle slap. Strength to Confessor Caitlin. I am Prindon. This is my brother, Tosadin. She gave Prindon a slap and wished him strength. Tosadin held his palm open to her. She stroked it with hers. He gave her a slap and added his wish of strength. He had a handsome smile that matched his brother's. Surprised by his friendliness, she returned his slap and greeting. Caitlin glanced to Richard. The brothers noticed the look, and in response, both gave Richard a slap and greeting. We wanted to tell you that you spoke with strength and honor today, Prindon said. Chandelin is a hard man, and a hard man to get to know, but he is not a bad man. He cares deeply for our people and wants only to protect them from harm. That is what we do, protect our people. Caitlin nodded. Richard and I are mud people too. The brothers smiled. The elders have proclaimed it for all to know. We will protect you both the same as any other of our people. Will Chandelin? Both grinned, but neither answered. They pulled their spears up, readying to leave.
Tell them I said they have fine bows, Richard said.
She glanced sideways to see him watching the two. She told his words to Prindon. They smiled as they nodded. We are very good with them. Richard's expressionless gaze stayed on the two brothers. Tell them I think their arrows look to be well made. Ask if I may see one. Caitlin frowned at him before translating for the hunters. The brothers beamed with pride. Prindon pulled an arrow from his quiver and handed it to Richard. Caitlin noticed that the elders were all quiet. Richard rolled the arrow in his fingers. Betraying no emotion, he looked at the nock and then turned it around and looked at the flat metal point. He handed the arrow back. Very fine work. As Prindon replaced the arrow in his quiver, Caitlin told him what Richard had said. He slid a hand partway up his spear and leaned a little of his weight on it. If you know how to shoot a bow, we would invite you to come with us tomorrow. Before she could translate, Savinlin spoke to her. Richard told me before, when you were here last, that he had to leave his bow behind in Westland, and that he missed it. As a surprise, I made him one, for when you both came back. It is a gift to him for teaching me how to make roofs that do not leak. It is at my home. I was going to give it to him tomorrow. Tell him, and tell him that if he agrees, I would like to take some of my hunters and go with him tomorrow. He smiled. We will see if he is as good a shot as our hunters. The brothers grinned and nodded their enthusiasm. They looked to be confident of the results of the contest. Kalin told Richard what Savinlin had said. Richard was surprised and seemed to be moved by what Savinlin had done. The Mud People make some of the finest bows I have ever seen. I am honored, Savinlin. That is generous of you. I would like very much to have you there with me. He grinned. We can show these two how to shoot. The brothers laughed at the last part of the translation. Tomorrow, then, Prindon said as they left. Richard had a dark look on his face as he watched the two walking away. What was all that about with the arrows? She asked. He finally looked over at her. Ask Savinlin if I could have a look at his arrows, and I'll show you. Savinlin handed over his quiver. Richard pulled out a handful of arrows, sorting through the ones with thin, hardened wooden points. Kalin knew them to be poisoned. Richard took an arrow with a flat metal point and put the rest back. He handed the arrow to her. Tell me what you see. She rolled it in her fingers, as he had done with the other. She didn't know what that was supposed to tell her, so she looked at the point and the nock. She shrugged. It looks just like an ordinary arrow to me. Just like any other. Richard smiled. Just like any other? He plucked an arrow out of the quiver by the nock end, holding the small round point up for her to see. He raised an eyebrow. Does it look like this one? Well, no. That point is small, long, thin, and round. But this one has a metal point. It's just like the one Prindon had. Richard slowly shook his head. No, it's not. He put the wooden-pointed arrow back and took the one she had, holding the nock toward her. See here? Where the string goes? It goes on the string like this, with the notch up and down. Does that tell you anything? She frowned and shook her head. Some arrows have spiraled feathers, so the arrows rotate. Some people believe that increases their power. I don't know if that is true or not, but it's beside the point. All the Mud People's arrows are fletched with straight feathers. That keeps them steady in flight. They hit in the same attitude as they were fired. But I still don't see how this arrow is different from Prindon's. Richard put his thumbnail in the nock. This is the way the arrow goes on the string, with the notch up and down like this. When the arrow is in the bow, and when it hits, it is just like this. Now look at the blade. See how it's up and down, too, just like the notch? The blade and the string are in the same plane. Savinlin's bladed arrows are all like this. The reason for it is that he uses these bladed arrows to hunt large animals like wild boar and deer. The rib bones in animals go up and down, just like the blade does. That gives the arrow a better chance of passing between the ribs, rather than being stopped by them. He leaned a little closer to her. Prindon's arrows are different. The blades are turned 90 degrees. When his arrows are knocked, the blade is horizontal. His arrows aren't made to pass through the ribs of animals. The blades are horizontal because he hunts something different, something with ribs that are horizontal. People. Kalin felt bumps ripple up her arms. Why would they do that? The Mud People are very protective of their land. They don't often allow outsiders in. I would guess that Chandelin and his men are the ones who guard their borders from encroachment. They are probably the fiercest hunters among the Mud People, and the best shots. Ask Savinlin if they are good with their bows. She conveyed the question. Savinlin chuckled. None of us ever beats Chandelin's men. Even if Richard with the temper is good, he is going to lose. But they are careful not to humiliate us too badly. They will be gracious winners. Richard should not worry. He will enjoy the day. They will teach him to shoot better. That is why I wish to take my men. Chandelin's men always teach us to be better. Among the Mud People, being the best, winning, means you have a responsibility to those you have beaten. You must teach them to be better. Tell him he cannot back out, now that he has accepted the challenge. I always thought it did people good to learn something, Richard said. I won't back out. Richard's intense gaze made her smile until her jaws hurt. Smiling himself, he turned, pulled his pack across the plank floor, and took out an apple. He cut the apple in half, removed the seeds, and handed half to her. The elders fidgeted nervously. In the Midlands, red fruit was poison, the result of an evil magic. They didn't know that in Westland, where Richard was from, you could eat red things like apples. They had seen him eat an apple once before, when he had tricked them into not making him take a wife from their village by convincing them that his eating it might make his seed poisonous to his bride. But they sweated as they watched the two of them doing it again. "What are you doing?" Kaelin asked him. "Just eat your apple and then translate for me." When they finished, Richard stood, motioning her up next to him. "Honored elders, I have returned from stopping the threat against our people. Now that it is over, I would like to ask your permission for something. I hope you find me worthy. I would like to ask your permission to have a mud woman as my wife. As you can see, I have taught Kaelin to eat these things as I do. She will not be harmed by it or by me, and in the same way, though she is a confessor, I will not be harmed by her. We would like to be together, and we would like to be wedded by our people." Kaelin could hardly get the last of the words out past the tightness in her throat, and she could hardly keep from throwing her arms around him. She could feel her eyes burning and filling with tears and had to clear her throat to finish the words. She put her arm around Richard's waist to steady herself. The elder suddenly beamed with surprise. The birdman wore a wide grin. "I think you are finally learning to be mud people," he said. "Nothing could please us more than for you two to be wed." Richard didn't wait for the translation, but gave her a kiss that took her breath away. The elders and their wives applauded. It was all the more special to her that they would be wedded before the mud people. Kaelin felt at home here. When they had come before, seeking help in their struggle to stop Rawl, Richard had shown the mud people how to make roofs that didn't leak. They had made friends, had fought battles together, with lives saved and lost. In the process, the two of them had bonded with these people. In honor of their sacrifices, the Birdman had proclaimed them mud people. The Birdman stood and gave Kaelin a fatherly hug that felt as if he were saying that he understood everything she had been through and was happy she had at last found happiness. She shed a few tears against his shoulder as he held her in his strong arms. Their adventure, a long ordeal, had taken her from the depths of pain and despair to the heights of joy. The fight had ended only yesterday. It didn't seem possible it could be over at last. As they went on with the feast, Kaelin wished more than ever that it could end soon so she could be alone with Richard. He had been held prisoner for over a month and had only rejoined her the day before. She hadn't even really had a chance to talk with him or hug him nearly enough. Children danced and played around the small fire while the adults gathered around torches, eating and talking and laughing. Wesselin scooted down next to her, hugged her, and said she would make her a proper wedding dress. Savinlin kissed her cheek and slapped Richard's back. She found it difficult to look away from Richard's gray eyes. She didn't want to. Ever. The hunters who had been out on the plain the day the birdman had tried to teach Richard how to call specific birds with the special whistle he had given Richard as a gift wandered by the elders' platform. All Richard could do that day was make a sound that called all the birds at once, but not different species individually. The hunters had laughed endlessly that day. As they listened now, Savinlin made Richard show the whistle and tell again how he had used it to call all the birds that roosted in the valley filled with gars. The thousands of hungry birds had eaten the gars' blood flies, creating a panic. The diversion had enabled Richard to rescue Scarlet's egg. The birdman laughed, even though he had already heard the story 3 times by now. Savinlin laughed and slapped Richard's back. The hunters laughed and slapped their thighs. Richard laughed as he watched them react to Kaelin's translation. Kaelin laughed at seeing Richard laugh.
I think we have found an adventure that satisfies them.
She thought about it and frowned.
How did Scarlet land you close enough to the egg without being seen by the Gars?
Richard looked away and was silent a moment. She landed me on the valley on the other side of the hills around Fire Spring. I went through the cave. He didn't look at her. Kaelin hooked some hair behind an ear.
And was there really a beast in the cave? A Shadron?
He let out a deep breath as he looked across the open area.
That there was, and more.
As she put her hand on his shoulder, he took it and kissed the back of it, still staring off.
I thought I was going to die there, alone. I thought I would never see you again.
He seemed to shake off the memory and leaned back on an elbow, gazing at her with a lopsided smile on his face.
The Shadron left some scars that aren't healed yet,
but I would have to take off my pants to show them to you.
Really?
Kaelin gave a throaty laugh.
I think I better have a look, to see if everything is all right.
As she looked deep into his eyes, she abruptly realized most of the elders were watching them. Suddenly she felt her face warm. She snatched up a rice cake and took a quick bite, relieved to know they couldn't understand their words. She hoped others couldn't understand the look in their eyes. She chided herself to pay more attention to where she was. Richard sat up again. Kaelin reached over to a small bowl of roasted ribs that looked to be wild boar and set it down in his lap.
Here, have some of these.
She looked over at a group of the wives. She held up the rice cake and smiled.
These are very good.
They nodded their satisfaction. She looked back to Richard. He was staring down at the bowl of meat. His face was white.
Take it away, he whispered.
Kaelin frowned and lifted the bowl from his lap, setting it behind her. She scooted closer to him.
Richard, what's wrong?
He was still staring at his lap, as if the bowl were still there.
I don't know. I looked down at the meat, and then I could smell it. It made me feel sick. It just seemed like a dead animal to me. Like I was about to eat some dead animal lying there in front of me. How could anyone eat some dead animal that was just lying there?
Kaelin didn't know what to say. He didn't look well.
I think I know what you mean. I was sick once, and they fed me some cheese. I threw it all back up. They thought it would be good for me, and every day fed me more, and I would throw it up until I was well again. That is why to this day I don't like cheese. Maybe it's something like that, because you have a headache.
Maybe, he said in a weak voice. I spent a long time at the People's Palace. They don't eat meat there. Darkenrol didn't eat meat. So none was served at the palace. Maybe I just got used to not eating meat.
She rubbed his back as he put his head in his hands, running his fingers through his hair.
First cheese, and now meat. His eating habits were becoming as peculiar as a wizard's.
Kaelin, I'm sorry, but I need to go somewhere where it's quiet. My head really hurts. She put her hand on his forehead. His skin was cold and clammy. He looked about ready to fall over. Her insides fluttered with worry. Kaelin squatted in front of the birdman.
Richard doesn't feel well. He needs to go somewhere quiet. Is that all right?
At first, he thought he knew why they wanted to leave. His smile faded when he saw the anxiety on her face.
Take him to the spirit house. It is quiet there. No one will bother him. Get Nissel if you think there be need. A little of his smile came back. Maybe he has spent too much time on the dragon. I thank the spirits my gift of flight was short.
She nodded, unable to manage much of a smile, and said a quick good night to the others. Picking up both their packs, she put a hand under Richard's arm and helped him to his feet. His eyes were squeezed shut, his eyebrows wrinkled together in pain. The pain seemed to pass a little, and he opened his eyes, took a deep breath, and started off with her across the open area. The shadows were thick among the buildings, but the moon was up, giving them enough light to see their way. The sounds of the feast faded into the background, leaving only the slow scrape of Richard's boots scuffing on the dry ground. He straightened a little.
I think some of it has passed.
Do you get headaches often?
He smiled over to her in the moonlight.
I'm famous for my headaches. My father told me that my mother used to get headaches like the ones I get, where you feel sick to your stomach because your head hurts so much.
But this one is different. I've never had ones like this before. It's like something inside my head is trying to get out. He took his pack from her and hoisted it to his shoulder. It hurts more than my other headaches. They passed from the narrow passageways to the wide spaces around the spirit house. It sat by itself, moonlight reflecting off the tile roof Richard had helped the mud people build. Wisps of smoke rose from the chimney. Around the side, by the door, a row of chickens roosted on a low wall. They watched as she pulled the door open for him, starting a little at the squeak of the hinges, and settled down as the two of them passed inside. Richard flopped down in front of the fireplace. Kaelin pulled out a blanket and made him lie back, bunching the blanket under his head. He rested the back of his wrist over his eyes as she sat cross-legged next to him. Kaelin felt helpless. "I think I should go get Nissel. Maybe a healer can do something for you." He shook his head. "I'll be all right. I just need to be away from all the noise." He smiled, his arms still over his eyes. "Have you ever noticed how badly we do at parties? Every time we are at a party, something happens." Kaelin thought back to every gathering they had been at together. "I think you're right." She rubbed a hand on his chest. "I think the only solution is for us to be alone." Richard kissed her hand. "I would like that." She enfolded his big hand in both of hers, wanting to feel the warmth of him as she watched him rest. It was dead quiet in the spirit house, except for the slow crackling of the fire. She listened to his slow, steady breathing. After a while, he slid his hand away and looked up at her. Firelight reflected in his eyes. There was something about his face, his eyes, something her mind was trying to tell her. He looked like someone else she had met. But who? A name whispered in the back of her thoughts, but she couldn't quite hear it. She stroked his hair back off his forehead. His skin didn't feel quite so cold. He sat up. "I just thought of something. I asked the elders for permission to marry you. But I haven't really asked you." Kaelin smiled. "No, you haven't." Suddenly, he looked embarrassed and unsure of himself. His eyes wandered a little. "That was really stupid. I'm sorry. That wasn't the right way to do it. I hope you're not angry." "I guess I'm not very good at this. I've never done it before."
"Me neither."
"And I guess this isn't the most romantic place to do it. It should be someplace beautiful."
"Wherever you are is the most romantic place in the world to me."
"And I guess I must look pretty silly asking you something like this when I'm lying here with a headache."
"If you don't ask me pretty soon, Richard Cipher," she whispered, "I'm going to choke it out of you."
His eyes finally found hers so intently it nearly took her breath away. "Kaelin Amnell, will you marry me?" Quite unexpectedly, she found she couldn't speak.